Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
From Gimlet Media, this is The Nod. I'm Brittany Luce.
And I'm Eric Eddings. So today on our show, we've got a story about the intricate relationships we have with our parents. It's also about basketball, something I know that is near and dear to your heart, Brittany.
Okay, Eric, let's not make too many jokes. It's a very, very beautiful story.
It is.
And telling this story is the editor of The Nod, Emmanuel Berry. So, here's Emmanuel.
My father has big brown hands. His fingers are marred with little scars and calluses. When he claps, the sound of his enthusiastic palms is deafening and rhythmic. I've watched these hands pick up squealing grandchildren, clutch TV remotes, act as puppets, cook, clean, drive, and dribble a basketball. All of it, in fluency with the world around him. But recently, my father's hands have started to change. His once-muscled fingers are bony. They still move through the world, but their fluid grace is replaced by a subtle trembling. My father's hands have changed because my father is sick. He might not get better, and that's made me confront the fact that I don't want my dad to die and for us to not really have known each other. And we don't really know each other. My dad and I stopped talking years ago. Or maybe a more accurate way to say this is we haven't really talked since I was in high school. But when I was young, I was always trying to get as close to my dad as possible. In photos, my siblings and I are all clinging to him, one kid hanging off of each of his long limbs. We're fighting for what little energy he had left to give after working long days. But the one thing my dad always had energy for was basketball. He loved the game like a sick child. He was a high school basketball star, and he wanted all of us to love basketball as much as he did. And we tried, for his sake. What do you remember about playing basketball with Dad when you were a kid?
Wow. Dad made me play basketball for our church. And I didn't want to at all because I love doing things with him. I just didn't feel the love for basketball like he did.
I was terrible at shooting, and I just always felt it was one of those, like, sort of defeatist mindsets where I felt like I was bad at it. So,
to be honest, my most vivid memory is a memory of when you played basketball. He got so intense about it. Like, he was yelling in the stands, and, like, he was getting, like, so frustrated, and, like, he always took this very, very seriously.
And so did I. I loved being on the court. The sound of squeaking shoes, creaking floors, the way the entire space of the gym would vibrate. The way my body would twist and turn and pivot and dance to the basket. I loved it all. But what I loved equally was seeing my dad in the stands. In the car after games, we'd annoy the hell out of the rest of my family by dissecting my every move, figuring out what I could improve on, what I did well. It was like we were speaking our own language, and I loved that I got to share that language with my dad. Together, we laid out big dreams for my future. Club teams, high school star, college, the WNBA. For a while, basketball was all I cared about. But then I found other things, like Latin, marching band, writing, stuff I wanted to share with my dad. But basketball was all he'd talk about. Our post-game talks stopped feeling like conversations and started sounding like lectures. I started to dread the car rides home. And there's one ride from my junior year of high school that I still think about all the time. I remember walking to my dad's car after the game. And as soon as I closed the door, it started. Why didn't you do this? How could you do this? You need to do this. Basketball was becoming less and less the center of my world, a smaller part of my future. As I listened to the steady rhythm of my dad's critique, I realized these lectures weren't about me or what I wanted. They were about him, and I didn't care what my dad wanted. So I did something I had never done before. "Shut the fuck up," I shouted. In our family, you do not cuss at my dad. It is completely off limits. And I had just screamed at him. He was taken aback for a moment, and then stony silence, waiting for an apology. But it was an apology I wouldn't give. I'd crossed a line, and rather than attempting to step back to safety or erase it, I dug deeper and built a trench. I told him I didn't want to talk about basketball with him anymore, and if that's all he wanted to talk about, we didn't need to talk. So we didn't. We didn't talk about my knee surgery after tearing a ligament. We didn't talk about how I ignored recruiters and let my game lag. We didn't talk about my decision to not play basketball in college, to abandon the dream we had crafted together. But as the months of silence carried on between me and my dad, I started to panic. If I lived in a world where my dad wasn't talking to me and I wasn't playing basketball, then what would I have left of him? With a few months left of high school, I changed my mind. I had to play basketball. So I found a team that would take me. I went to Albion College, found myself completely miserable, but at least I had basketball. Until I didn't. I tore a ligament in my knee about 2 months into the season, and the doctors told me that basketball and I were done. Years have passed. I haven't picked up a ball in forever. Neither has my dad. The silence between us is long past, but there's something that hasn't been repaired. That trench I built between us has stretched into a gulf. And nowadays, we just yell basketball pleasantries across it. "Did you watch that game? How does the team look this year? LeBron, LeBron, LeBron." Basketball gives us the illusion that we're talking to each other. But we're not. My dad doesn't know much about the big moments in my life, like running from tear gas in Ferguson, moving to China, or landing my dream job. He doesn't know because he never bothered to ask. That's why we don't talk. That's what I've told myself for years. But I've come to realize that it's not just my life we're not talking about. It's his. While my dad wasn't bothering to get to know me, I wasn't bothering to get to know him. My dad and I had talked nonstop about basketball for years, and I couldn't tell you why he cared so much, what it meant to him. What I can tell you is there is one moment in his basketball career that he clearly cares a lot about, but I don't know anything about it. All my life, I've been told that there's one thing I can't ask my dad about, one topic that's completely off limits. A high school basketball game that took place in 1978, the last high school game he ever played. In all my life, I've followed that rule. I've never brought it up. But I had a hunch that if I wanted to understand my father, to make sense of why basketball is so important to him, I'd have to ask a question I was told never to ask. What happened in that basketball game? To talk to my dad, I had to go to Michigan, where my parents still live. I visit once or twice a year. I don't go back to my childhood home because my parents lost the house years ago. When I open the door to my parents' condo, of course there's a college basketball game on in the background. My dad is in his usual position, sunken into his recliner, remote in hand. It's how he relaxes after long shifts managing restaurants. He's hovering on the edge of sleep, drifting off to the sound of basketball. He's still big, but there's a bit more frailty to his heavy limbs. He's grown a silver beard, and his head is shaved. I gently wake him up, and as usual, he says he wasn't asleep. My 3-year-old niece Sawyer is playing a very one-sided game of hide-and-seek with her grandpa. She peeks her head out of her hiding spot.
I see you. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I can.
I start commenting on the game he's watching.
Can you have one yet?
My bracket was shot up a long time ago.
But this is exactly what I didn't come here to do. Have basketball small talk in the living room. I came here to ask him about that game, to see if I could get to know my dad better, to close that distance between us. I ask him if I can talk for a second. It's for work, I say. We walk into another room, the basketball game fading into the background. I notice how heavy his movements are, how exhausted his breath. Little efforts take a lot of his energy these days.
What you want?
Okay. I can sit in the chair and you can sit on the end of the bed. What will be more comfortable for you?
Anyway, it's okay with me.
Okay.
I go to sleep.
No, he can't go to sleep. We're talking.
As soon as I sat down, I got super nervous. My dad is one of the few people who makes me nervous. We start talking about why my father even started playing basketball. And it was both that he loved it and that it was a necessity. He grew up poor in Mississippi, the youngest of 11. My father said being a black kid in the South in the 1970s, there wasn't a lot of opportunity for him. And basketball, it seemed like a way out.
The goal was for me to play basketball, enjoy it, and try to get a scholarship to go to school. Because I knew I couldn't, you know, afford things.
Basketball, it was a way for something even more than that for you.
Yeah, it was a way for me to get into college.
And my dad was good. He was tall, a natural athlete. He easily made the high school team.
My varsity coach, part of way through the season, decided to pull me up from the freshman team to the varsity team. And I guess there was a tradition where seniors was always the one that would start and never, you know, they never had a freshman start. One of the seniors got benched and the coach had started playing me in the game instead. And one day in practice, going for a layup, this senior decided to undercut me. And that was my first experience of getting hurt. And he wind up busting my kneecap. And so I wind up having surgery. And that was the first time I experienced that. It's the first time I got scared that I wasn't going to be able to be successful at playing basketball anymore.
After surgery, the pain didn't go away, which meant he couldn't play anymore. Any sort of pathway to something better disappeared.
At that time, I was very well scouted at the time, thinking that I was going to get to go to a school, a nice college and everything. And all those offers got pulled away from me because of this injury. I had to sort of give that up. And it was hard to give that up. It just made me realize how fast something can be taken away. And it was hard for me to stay and be there. I was very depressed.
I didn't know any of this. I was surprised to hear him talk about depression, something I've always struggled with, but couldn't imagine he would understand. My dad was desperate for a fresh start, away from Mississippi, away from basketball. Luckily, my grandmother decided to move to Michigan, and my dad went with her. In Michigan, a different surgeon took a look at his knees, and he found and removed bone shards. And suddenly, the pain was gone. My dad could play basketball again. That dream that had been crushed in Mississippi was back on. But this time, he only had one season on a brand new team in a new state to get scouted, to make good on the path he'd set out. As a senior, he joined a team that had won a state championship with Magic Johnson the previous year.
Here, the Class A championship, George. Well, we're down here, and they got the man of the hour, or a couple of hours it took. Irvin Johnson, you're a very sought-after player.
My dad says games were always packed with fans in red and white. Radio announcers would call the games for the local station, and newspaper photographers waited under the basket to catch players in motion. And it was this chaotic for games that didn't even matter.
We did a scrimmage against this team out of Detroit. They came down to scrimmage us at Everett High School. And coach told me that they had 2 6'8" guys that was really strong. And I was coming across the lane and I just drop-stepped him real quick and went up and dunked the ball. And after that, I dunked like 4 times in this scrimmage on people. And people looked at me like, wow, you can do that? They wanted to try to figure out a name for me, a nickname for me. They already had one for Irvin. As everybody know, Tim Scout nickname, Irvin Magic Johnson. One of the sportscasters found out I was from Mississippi. During the game, dude, I dunked the ball. He said, Mississippi Slammer. That's where they got the name, the Mississippi Slammer.
We were falling back into our comfort zone. Basketball pleasantries, but this time about my dad's high school games. None of them the game I came here to talk about. And so I cut to the chase. Kind of. I wanted to ask you, So when I remember being young and mom, you know how mom has stacks of papers everywhere? Mm-hmm. And there was one that had this like newspaper clipping. Wait. Yeah. From the game.
From Everett High School game. Yep.
Yep. And I remember asking mom what this was about. And I don't exactly remember how old I was, but I remember her saying that the way she talked about it, I remember her saying that it was sad and that I shouldn't mention it.
That picture was of the final game when we lost in the semifinals. I blame myself for losing that game.
What? Why? My dad explained to me that it wasn't just any game. The team was determined to repeat a state championship, and they were well on their way to doing just that. They had only lost one game that season, and they kept winning in the state tournament. They were about to play in the semifinals, and the game was the talk of the state. Media and scouts were looking at the matchup. The day of the game, classes were set aside for a big pep rally. It was such a big deal that my dad needed a suit to wear for the game and for press after.
I didn't even make it to our own pep rally because I left school to go and get fitted for a suit, which was ridiculous. And I think my mind was not in focus on the game when I got to the game. Remember getting to the gym, getting into the locker room. I don't even remember the locker room that well. That's how scary this is. I remember coming out, running onto the court, and I remember them calling people's names onto the court, who's playing, but I don't remember faces in the crowd. I was very excited, overwhelmed, high energy, just too hyped for the game. I was overhyped for the game, maybe. We was holding our own, we was playing pretty good. It was a 2-point game pretty much throughout the whole game.
And at some point, my dad jumped into the air and grabbed a rebound. And his team expected him to do what he'd done all season. Be the Mississippi Slammer. Dunk the ball. But he didn't.
I grab a rebound off the backboard above the rim. And I go up above the rim to where I'm basically all I had to do is just drop the ball in the basket. Instead, I threw it across the basket. And I never will forget it. It's just, it was hard on me because that was a turning point in the game that had made me feel that I lost the game.
How long do you think you carried around that one little moment?
I still carry it around. Obviously, I'm still talking about it.
What do you think would make you not carry it around with you?
I don't know. I can't go back in time and redo it.
Do you remember, I'm almost done talking about that game. I swear.
What game? You don't keep bringing that game up. I don't want to talk about that game no more.
Like, we're talking years later when mom is like, this is still sad. Like, don't talk about it.
It was very hard. I didn't talk about the game. I don't talk about that game too much. Because it was always a very hard thing to go back to. Because I know in my heart, there's no way we would have should have lost.
Did it feel like opportunities were closing for you with that game?
Yeah. If I had played better and we would have won that game, we would have been in the finals. And there would have been more visual eyes on us. And the thing was, is that I was only out there for 1 year because I came up here in my senior year. So nobody really knew who I was. For me to get the more exposure, we needed to continue to win. And when we didn't win, I think it's just a lot of the opportunities for me to be seen went out the window.
Is that part of why I wasn't supposed to ask about the game?
Well, I think your mom knows how hard it was for me. And I feel that I have a lot of resentment about the opportunities that I felt that it could have changed my life from the way we are now, for me doing what I am. But over the years, I've gotten better, and I feel what happened is happened, and I've come to accept it.
He says this like a question, and I'm not sure I buy this, the accepting it. When my dad says from the way we are now, he means him never getting a college degree, raising five kids, and making ends meet. Where we are now is missing part of a lung and a slipped disc. Where we are now is no kidneys and dialysis, while still working 60-hour weeks. It's been almost 40 years since he missed that shot. But maybe that's how long it takes to mourn an alternative universe. A universe where maybe you wouldn't have had to struggle so much. And maybe you accept it, that you'll struggle, but you refuse to accept that for your kids. And maybe that refusal is why you lecture them in cars. After the break, we go back to that car ride. And this time, I try not to swear. Basketball was no longer a path forward for my dad, but he still thought of it as a way forward for his kids. I wanted him to be able to see that there were other paths, that I had taken other paths, and I was just as wonderful and charming on these roads as I was on the court.
What were your aspirations for me with basketball, I guess, then?
I saw something in you in basketball that I saw come out of me. you played with, when you got angry, you played basketball the same way I do.
What? How is that?
With a lot of aggression, power, and nobody could stop you from going to the basket. Manny, when you went up for the basketball and you got the ball in your hand, it was in your hand. Nobody else could take it. When you drove to the basket and you were determined to score a basket, nobody could stop you. You were so powerful. You were such a powerful player. It was very exciting to see you play the game.
The pride that you hear in his voice, the only time it rings so clear is when he's talking about me and basketball. It's the pride that I wanted to hear about my grades or my performance in a play in high school. It's the pride that I want to hear about my job now.
I think part of what drove me crazy in high school and part of why I got so mad at you was that I felt like all you wanted to talk about was basketball. That like all the other things going in my life were like totally irrelevant. And that me being good at basketball and that sort of pressure was all that you cared about, and that you could like literally give zero craps about the rest of the stuff. Like that is what it felt like to me as a high school student.
Sorry you felt that way, because I thought your education was more important to me than basketball in a lot of ways. I knew that I didn't have a lot of money to be able to put you guys through college. And I wanted to get you guys there any way I could, because I felt that it was very vital for you guys to be successful in life. You're bright. You're very bright. And you're very, your grades and stuff was perfect. So you didn't, you could have went, I felt that whether you got an athletic scholarship, you were going to be able to go to any college anyway because of your grades. But I liked the idea of you playing basketball. I guess I wanted to try to have that legacy go on, or try to see if that legacy can go further. I don't know. I was a little kid. I guess it brought me back to some of the memories when I was on a basketball court.
I guess what I'm trying to express is that I feel like most of the like attention and feedback that I have gotten from you has been about basketball in my life.
I'm sorry. I don't.
I don't want you to apologize. It's not
feedback. I don't know. We don't talk too much. You always avoid me.
I don't avoid you.
Okay. When you come in and you say, "So hi, Dad. How you doing?" You know, I don't. You know.
He's now feeling guilty.
You should not. I don't want you to feel guilty. That is not what this is about. Yeah.
I don't want him to apologize. I want him to understand the past so that we can move closer. And we have to move closer because he's sick and we don't have time to be far apart anymore. So I push on.
How did our relationship and how did our relationship with basketball change once I got into high school, my junior and senior year?
How did it change? Did you think it changed?
You don't remember like that we could not ride home in the car together anymore after games?
Yeah, you didn't like me telling you all the things that you could do or that you did wrong or the frustrating. I didn't think your coach was utilizing you the right way. And I think it was frustrating to you for me to say things to you and talk about it. And that's all I could talk about was basketball with you and not. And I guess I didn't realize that until your mom said something to me that the reason why you didn't want to ride home because of all I could talk about was the game and how, and you didn't want to talk about it, and I would keep talking and talking.
Do you remember me yelling at you?
Vaguely.
you vaguely remember me yelling at you?
Vaguely, I do.
I didn't want to talk about basketball with you anymore, but like we also then like just did not talk like that much at all for like a while.
Huh. I guess I didn't realize that. I guess you do. You sort of remember it more so than I do. I remember me saying that I won't talk to you about basketball anymore. And
I know, but like the result of that was that we just didn't talk at all.
I'm sorry.
I don't want you to apologize. I'm just like,
I guess I, at the time, I guess I didn't know how to talk to you about very much of anything else because I probably didn't know how to talk to you about anything else at that time.
Literally the only reason I went to Albion was because I felt like I couldn't give up basketball. Like all of a sudden I panicked and realized that I wouldn't be playing anymore, and that really freaked me out.
Oh, I didn't know that. I really didn't. I didn't feel to get that from you.
It's because we weren't talking.
Okay. See, you should have talked to me and I would have told you, don't go to Albion.
Back in high school, all I wanted was to hear him tell me it was okay not to play basketball anymore. It didn't happen then, but it's nice to have it now. And I think what I didn't understand when I was younger, that I finally get now, is that my dad's biggest concern was never about basketball. It was about making me happy. But he had trouble understanding that basketball wasn't making me happy anymore. And I think he understands that now. I think we can talk differently now. We can be honest. But I still wanted to test this. A week before I came home for this visit, I called my dad. And he did what he'd done for 10 years, made small talk about basketball. He said we should go shoot some hoops. And I did what I'd done for 10 years, replied in kind. Held back on what I really wanted to say. Are you healthy enough? Is that safe?
I thought it was funny last week when we were on the phone. Funny and sweet at the same time when you were like, maybe we should go shoot hoops when you're home, when you called.
I don't even know if I can pick up a basketball.
It is such a ludicrous thing for you to say. And yeah. Like, no offense, maybe, but you're not in the best of health right now.
Maybe because also you say, always come to me and say, you're getting shorter.
You are getting shorter.
When did I go and shoot basket? I shot basket. It was Sawyer's birthday, and there was a basketball court. And I picked the basketball and started dribbling. And I shot the basketball. I was, 3 feet away from the basket and couldn't get the ball up to the rim.
What?
Couldn't get the ball up to the rim. It took me like 3 or 4 tries before I eventually got the ball up and hit the rim. So,
how did that feel?
embarrassing for one, and very discouraging that my strength, my agility, all those things are no longer there. But the weird thing was, I was very persistent. And I stayed on the court, and guess what?
Did you make a basket?
I started making baskets.
I'm glad that you're proud of that. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, I was proud of me too, because I was looking embarrassing. Everybody looking at me like, okay, this is supposed to be this basketball player, and he can't even make a basket. But no, I started making baskets, and I started going in and doing layup. And I was like, kind of, like, wait a minute, maybe I can shoot baskets again. Maybe to come back.
There was something so my dad about this moment. The optimism of a potential basketball comeback, but also the persistence, a trait that we share. At this point, it's been about 2 hours since I started talking with my dad, and I feel like we've made a lot of headway. But there's a little part of me that can't help feeling annoyed that while we're being more open and honest, basketball is still there in the room with us. But just as I'm about ready to turn off my gear, my dad puts basketball aside and he asks me something he's never asked me in my 28 years.
I have maybe 2 more questions.
I have 2 more questions.
You have 2 more questions. You have questions for me, sir.
Yeah.
What?
What do you like about your job?
I like that I get to talk to a bunch of different people. I like that there's power in it. like there's power in telling stories. I think it's like one of the most powerful things you can do. And I'm clearly a power hungry human being. So I like that. I like crafting a story. I think it's amazing.
When did you find out that you was going to be a person that's like a journalist and wanted to be this?
I think when I transferred to MSU, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I knew that I wanted to do maybe something with writing because I've always enjoyed that. But I think it's probably mom forcing us to listen to NPR in the car all the time. I think that was it.
Yeah, mom did help her. She still make me listen to NPR.
You're not a journalist yet?
No.
These are simple questions, not revolutionary or really that deep. But you know what they're not about? They're not about basketball. My dad and I are both trying to do better, talking about things like my fear that my apartment is toxic and killing me.
I think if it was going to happen, I already would have like been feeling the effects of it. And I hope so.
Him about his health.
How are you?
I'm not doing too good today.
You're not feeling good? What's wrong?
No.
About international soccer.
And so I don't want Russia to win.
Well, there was a story done on the United States talking about the reason why their teams are not getting stronger is because they're suddenly alienated the minority groups.
That trench is much more narrow, but basketball is in no way gone.
They made the game so much where, you know, LeBron just bulldozes his way down the court and just runs over people. And it doesn't get called. You know, those kind of things would not have happened with Jordan. When Jordan was playing, somebody would have taken him out.
Here is what I've learned about my dad. I know my dad broke his arm jumping off a table as a kid. I know he finds it hard that my grandmother with dementia doesn't recognize him. And I know he once considered being an artist. And I also know this. My father is sick, and we have so much more to talk about. The Nod is hosted by Eric Eddings and Brittany Luce. The show is produced by Kate Parkinson Morgan. Our senior producer is Sara Abdurrahman. We are edited by me, Emmanuel Berry. This episode was edited by Jorge Just. The show is mixed by Cedric Wilson. Our theme music is by Khalid B. Original scoring by the Bobby Lord and the Cedric Wilson. For full music credits, you can check out the show notes. Special thanks to Peter Bresnan, Stevie Lane, Kalila Holt, Wallace Mack, Saeed Tijan Thomas, and Elvin Mellon.